Jesus movies often picture him as so beaten before the cross that you can't recognize him. That would have been true. We are going to list his trials and his beatings as we go through it. Isaiah 52:14 says his appearance was marred more than any man. One of the translations of that could have been, he didn't look human. He was beat up so much, he was beyond looking human. In other words, you couldn't recognize him. So when they make Jesus movies and picture that, it's fitting. There were 6 trials and 5 judges. The reason is Pilate was twice, back and forth. He's going to send him to Herod and then get him back. So, 6 trials, 5 judges, Pilate twice. Mockings and beatings 3 times. One will be in the first section that we'll look at now. He's at Caiaphas' house still. It was like a courtyard, and outside were Peter and John. They had tried him before Annas, father-in-law, Caiaphas, the working high priest's son-in-law. And it was cold, and so they had a fire. And then Peter fulfills the prediction of Jesus that he would deny him 3 times. One way of looking at cockcrows, it's a time of the day. You'll deny me before 3 a.m. Or you'll deny me before you hear the first cock crow, and then it will immediately crow a second time. That second time is only in Mark. But Mark is Peter's memory. So he denied him 3 times and probably heard the first cock crow and probably a second one immediately right after. Jesus kept Peter in the faith. He's denying to other people, but on the inside he still believed that Jesus was the Savior. So he runs off, and then after looking at Jesus, he runs off, and then they're going to start to beat Jesus. And that gives us our new section today, Luke 22, beginning at verse 63. Now the men who were holding Jesus in custody were mocking him and beating him. They blindfolded him and were asking, saying, "Prophesy, who is the one who hit you?" And they were saying many other things, blaspheming. Isaiah 50, verse 6, predicted, beating. I gave my back to those who strike me. Isaiah 53 is the best known prophecy. With his stripes we are healed. We've already quoted Isaiah 52:14 that he was beaten more than any man. We could say beyond looking human. Face was all marred. These people are going to bow to Jesus someday. I imagine this will come up in their minds, if it doesn't come up in a conversation. This will come up in their minds, how mean they were to him. The Matthew account adds spitting on him, a fulfillment of another prophecy added to the book of Isaiah. So they were making fun of him, prophesy, who hit you? You should supernaturally know the names of the people that hit you. And covering him up and making fun of him. So far, there have been trials at the house. I think probably father-in-law and son-in-law lived in the same building. So we don't need to change the houses. But there was father-in-law, trial number 1, son-in-law, trial number 2. We get to verse 66, and this is the whole council gathering. So let's call this trial number 3 before we get to Pilate. It likely had to be a decision in the morning, so this is early as possible as it could be called morning, and the council of the Sanhedrin is gathering together. Let's read verse 66. leaving the house of the high priest. Verse 66, when it was day, and I think really break of day, when it was really early day, the council of the elders of the people assembled both chief priests and scribes, and they led him away to their council chamber, saying, in the next section will have very important theology in it, but we will save that. They did not use daylight savings time, so break of day, as early as possible. Actually, it was not legal to have a trial in a house. So they would get together in the council chamber. The Jewish Talmud said you had to have at least one third of them to have a death penalty trial. Of course, there were 70. Moses had 70 elders, so the Sanhedrin had the same number of 70. So he had to have 23 to 24 present. Probably some were at the high priest's house in the middle of the night, but I bet they had to wake a few more up. And I bet they invited only the ones they knew would agree. But we don't see any reference here to Nicodemus being invited, the one to whom Jesus said you have to be born again. We don't see any reference here to Joseph of Arimathea being invited, and he will be the one that asked for the body of Jesus to put in his own sepulcher. So they invited only the people that they knew would agree with the high priest. They were selected to come. The Sanhedrin met in the temple. Now, there were two places over time where they met, and the time of changing where they met was just about the time of Jesus. So we don't know whether this is the old place or this is the new place. If we can picture the Wailing Wall, the Jewish people now are writing their prayer requests on little papers and putting it in the wall, and you see them praying. Just off to the left is a door.
Yeah.
That would be where the Sanhedrin had met in early times, right to the left of the Wailing Wall. Sometime about 40 years before the temple's destruction, they changed their meeting place and met up on the platform in the porch. Now, Jesus had just taught there. You can go back a few chapters in the Gospel of Luke, and he just taught there. Show me a coin. Whose picture is on the coin? Caesar's. Give to Caesar what is Caesar's. He had just taught up on the porch. So, to picture the Wailing Wall, off to the left, there's a room. That would have been the older place where the council met. Somewhere, don't know whether it's before or after the cross, but somewhere there they would change, and they met up on the Solomon's porch where Jesus had been teaching. So one of those two places, either way, they had to have a meeting in the daytime, because you couldn't do trials at night. I don't know anything about Texas law, but I was on the grand jury for 6 months last year, and we didn't do trials at night. You don't do trials at night. It's like 2 a.m, let's get this over with. I don't care whether we have guilty or innocence, let's go home. You don't have trials at night are illegal. It is not unusual for Christian lawyers in modern times to look at the Gospels and write articles and books on how illegal these trials were. Now, I'll list a little few of the things that they say. We've already said it was illegal to have trial at night. That makes sense. Everybody's in a rush. Get this over with. Let's go home. Illegal to have a trial at night. Illegal in their law to have a verdict the same day as the trial. They didn't want to rush to judgment. In other words, you couldn't do a trial, say guilty, let's kill him. Too fast. You would have a trial, have to wait a day or two, verdict, have to wait a day or two, punishment. Because you have to think about what has been said. So illegal to have it at night, illegal to rush it this much. In their law, the death penalty case had to have a defense attorney. I mean, that makes sense. Had to have a defense attorney. Where was Jesus' defense attorney? They arrested him before there were charges. That's not legal then and now. Really, you can't arrest people before you have charges. You don't arrest people and then go fishing for charges, which is exactly what is happening in the Gospel of Luke that we're looking at. They don't have any charges for him. They're going to arrest him and then find charges. Also, they should have definite charges. And what you have with Jesus' trial is one of the witnesses says this, another witness says that. They don't agree. The common one was, he said, destroy this temple and in 3 days I will rebuild it. Well, number one, he was talking about God's dwelling of his human body. If it were destroyed in 3 days, he would rise again. That's the definition of what he was saying. Even if that were mixed up, it's hypothetical. If, and it's talking about other people, if you were to destroy this temple, definitely did not make any plot to destroy the temple. That was all a lie. And one witness gives one charge, another witness gives another charge, and they didn't really have any because they didn't agree. That's illegal to have a trial, and you don't have any definite charges. And then the next one is very common in our law. You can't use self-incrimination. You can't threaten a person, beat them, and then based upon what they say, make charges. You can't have self-incrimination, which is exactly what is going on here. I think I'll move a page here to speed it up, but without reviewing all the things, we can see that it is a illegal trial, especially arresting a person before there are any charges and then beating them to get self-incrimination, which is exactly what's going on here. So they've already beaten him. They had the trials at the house. Now they got to go in the morning to the temple. And now Caiaphas tries to get him to incriminate himself. That's beginning in verse 67 through 71. If you are the Christ, tell us. But he said to them, if I tell you, you will not believe. And if I ask you a question, you will not answer. But from now on, you will see the Son of Man will be seated at the right hand of the power of God. And they all said, are you the Son of God then? And he said to them, yes, I am. Then they said, what further need do we have of testimony? For we have heard it ourselves from his own mouth. If you are the Christ, means if you are the Messiah. I mean, the Christos is the anointed one, and that's in Greek, and in Hebrew it's the Messiah. If you are the Messiah, tell us. Jesus' initial reply is, you're not going to believe you if I tell you the truth. He had said that earlier in his ministry, like at the I am the shepherd, you are the sheep parable. In John chapter 10, my sheep hear my voice and follow me. But just before that, he said, but you do not believe because you are not of my sheep. He could tell them the truth, and Caiaphas isn't going to believe the truth. And the chief priests, the chosen ones of the ones that hated Jesus, they were the ones that were the third of the Sanhedrin who could come. The truth will not satisfy them. He doesn't ultimately give answers. And there are two names here. One is Son of Man, verse 69. Verse 70, Son of God. Son of Man, we've talked about that over and over again in the Gospel of Luke. It's his favorite title of himself, and it refers to Daniel chapter 7, 13 and 14, where the Son of Man stands before the Ancient of Days, and he is given an everlasting kingdom of all peoples and nations and languages. And the high priest and the Sanhedrin knew exactly what he's talking about when he said Son of Man. I have actually read liberals of our time with the phrase Son of Man saying that Jesus said, I am only human. You'd have to be non-Jewish and know nothing about the Old Testament to have that interpretation, which is the case. A liberal critic of the Bible doesn't really like to study the Bible. Doesn't that sort of make sense? If you hate the Bible, you're not very good at studying it. When he said, I am the Son of Man, it was a reference to Daniel chapter 7 being the world ruler. And you can tell that from the full sentence. I'm going to be seated at the right hand of the power of God. And you can tell it from the other Gospels, which actually quote part of Daniel 7. So, Daniel 7, also Psalm 110, verse 1, The Lord said to my Lord, Sit on my right hand till I make your enemies your footstool. Psalm 110 is another quote here that Jesus gave. That's interesting. There's two Lords. David is writing, The Lord said to my Lord. Two Lords in the Old Testament. So you have two Lords in the Old Testament, and you have a reference that he is the Son of Man who will go to the Ancient of Days and get the worldwide kingdom. And those critics and judges that knew the Old Testament knew exactly what he meant when he said, I am the Son of Man coming in the power. They knew it referred to Daniel. Then there is another question here, which I like the Gospel of Luke. It's more clear in the Gospel of Luke, verse 70, Are you the Son of God? And he said, Yes, I am. Are you the Son of God, not a Son of God? Now, all who believe in Jesus as Savior are like God's children. But we are like adopted children. That's Paul's way of doing it. We're like adopted children in that we have full love, full blessing, and full inheritance. But Jesus is alone the full Son of God. In him dwells the fullness of the Godhead bodily. And John's way of saying it is Jesus is the unique Son, the only begotten Son. He's the only one in that category. He is fully Son of God. Like Father, like Son, same attributes, same characteristics. Now, Jesus' answer in verse 70, in English, it is emphasized with good reason. Yes, I am. Now, the original we know, because it came over into English, the word for I is ego. So if you say someone likes their ego, they like I. They like me. Now, what you have in the original here is you have a repetition. And that's the way of emphasizing. And how do you translate it into English? What they've done here is, yes, I am. But it's kind of like, I really am. I certainly am. It's ego and I. It's two I's. I certainly am the Son of God. Well, that's what his answer was. So, the Son of Man is the world ruler. Well, that's quite sufficient, coming to get all the peoples and all kingdom forever. The Son of God, like Father, like Son, I am in a unique category of being the Son of God, and that is Jesus' answer. It always comes to mind, you wouldn't think in a little farm town we'd have too many Jewish people, but we had a few Jewish students at our high school. And they would say, Jesus never claimed to be God. Other people may have said it of him, like John 1:1, in the beginning was the Word was with God, the Word was God, but that's the Apostle John, by the way. In him dwells the fullness of the Godhead bodily. Yeah, that Paul said that. But Jesus himself didn't say it. So this was one of the verses I gave him. And the other one was the one we read for scripture reading. I and my Father are one. Are you the Son of God? Yes, I certainly am. Those are quotes from Jesus. So he did claim to be like Father, like Son, and it really ought to be clear theology. All groups that follow the Bible believe in the deity of Christ. And that is what the Bible teaches, and it clearly teaches it here. Now, sometimes when we've gone through Luke, it's been a section that's only in Luke, and that's what happens next. And eventually, they go to Pilate, and then they go to Herod. There's no reference to going to Herod in the other Gospels. So first we'll get Pilate involved, and then we'll get Herod involved, and Herod is only here in Luke. Let's look at Luke 23:1-5. Then the whole body of them got up and brought him before Pilate. And they began to accuse him, saying, "We have found this man misleading our nation, forbidding to pay taxes to Caesar, and saying that he himself is the Messiah, a king." So Pilate asked of him, saying, "Are you the king of the Jews?" And he answered him and said, "It is as you say." You yourself said it. Verse 4, then Pilate said to the chief priests and the crowds, "I find no guilt in this man." But they kept on insisting, saying, "He stirs up the people, teaching all over Judea, starting from Galilee, even as far as this place." The question is, they met in the temple, and this was the highest court in Israel, and now we're going to Pilate. Now, what had happened was the Roman government had taken away the right of capital punishment cases from Israel. They could try everything else and do whatever they wanted to with it, but when they wanted to execute a person, the Romans would get involved in it. They did not let the Jewish courts decide an execution. That kind of makes sense, or they'd be executing the Roman soldiers. So, but they had to go to Pilate to get an approval of anything like this. One interpretation of this prophecy is that it fulfills Genesis 49:10. "The scepter shall not depart from Judah, nor the ruler's staff between his feet, until Shiloh comes. To him shall be the obedience of the peoples." So the world ruler is coming, and until the world ruler is here, Judah will have the right of the courts. And there's a quote in the Talmud that when the Romans took away the rights of capital punishment, they said something like, "Woe is us! The scepter has been taken away, and the Messiah has not come." But he had come. They should have understood this as a fulfillment of prophecy, that your scepter, your ruler's staff, your power of your courts had been taken away. That means the Messiah would be here, and the only candidate was the Lord Jesus Christ. But they had to go to Pilate, because they could not do a capital punishment. It's not here in Luke, but it's in John 18, which I would like to add. The Jews would not go into his house because they had to eat the Passover. Number one, why couldn't they go in a Gentile house? I'd say it again because it's important to me. Gentiles did abortions. That's just about always left out. Just about left out of every commentary, but you can find it in the Talmud. Gentiles did abortions. We are not going in that house. They may have killed a baby in there. We're not going in there. That's why they wouldn't go in Pilate's house. Often lost in modern thinking. And then they said, if we go in there, we'll be unclean. And you could go in there and in another week be clean again, but Passover is coming up. And that brings to mind the Last Supper was a Passover. So why is the Passover coming up? It's because the Galileans had Passover on Thursday night, and the Judeans had it on Friday. The Judeans are going to kill the lambs at 3 o'clock. They're going to start to slaughter the lambs right at the time Jesus died. So Galileans, Last Supper on Thursday. Judeans, Last Supper on Friday. So they bring him outside, which is fascinating, which means his wife sent him a message of, had a dream, don't know anything about him. He has to go outside in the cold. I bet he was really mad, really sick of it. But they mentioned Galilee. So now we can go ahead and look at the next section. Because they mentioned Galilee, well, there's Herod. Let him deal with it. Verse 6. But when Pilate heard it, he asked whether the man was a Galilean. And he learned that he belonged to Herod's jurisdiction. He sent him to Herod, who himself also was in Jerusalem at that time. Now Herod was very glad when he saw Jesus, for he had wanted to see him for a long time because he had been hearing about him and hoping to see some sign performed by him. Then he questioned him at length, but he answered him nothing. The chief priests and the scribes were standing there, accusing him vehemently, and Herod with his soldiers, after treating him with contempt and mocking him, dressed him in a gorgeous robe and sent him back to Pilate. Now Herod and Pilate became friends with one another from that very day, for before that they had been enemies with each other. When Jesus was born, Herod the Great ruled all of it. As time went on, the different provinces get split up. And Herod Jr., let's call him that, Herod Jr. gets Galilee, and Pilate gets Judea. Now, when Jesus was born, they were all together, and Herod the Great ruled all of it, but it's all split up now. And Herod Jr., Herod Antipas rules in Galilee, and Pilate rules in Judea, and neither one of them lived in Jerusalem. They just happened to be in town for the Passover. They're coming to town for the week of festivities. And after Pilate learns that he's a Galilean, Pilate thinks, I can get out of this because Herod's in town. Send him over there. Let him figure it out. Pilate wants to get out of it. But I would stress that it says before then they had been enemies. Now, I'm not going to list everything we know about him. You could write an entire article, maybe even a small book, on Pilate or Herod and how they didn't get along. Herod had written letters to Caesar about Pilate. And Caesar had written back, make the Jews happy. There was another case where a person was executed, October AD 31, executed in Rome for being a traitor, and he hated Jews. They put things in his throat, tied his hands, and threw him in the river. This is just before this. And anybody who hated Jews might have been an ally of this guy. So Pilate's in trouble. He has to try to make Herod happy. It's historically true. And he tried to make him happy. Go over here and let him deal with it. He's a Galilean. Jesus would not talk with him. I wanted to see some tricks. Wanted to see some miracles. Jesus wasn't going to play that game and do any tricks. So they make fun of him. And it says they put a robe on him. There are references to robe in the other Gospels. Yeah, we know one says scarlet, one says purple, kind of like in the middle. You know, like maybe a little bit more purple than the pews. Kind of in the middle. It's kind of interesting. One gospel says scarlet, one says purple. But this is where it came from. They were making fun of him and sending him back to Pilate. Well, we'll pick up the trial there. But Pilate gets him twice. Pilate, Herod, Pilate, only Herod here. Only here. Historically true, they had been enemies. They were in town for the Passover, and he's trying to make friends out of him. Very important words theologically at the close of chapter 22. I am the Son of Man. Daniel chapter 7, I will rule the whole world and all peoples forever. That's what the Son of Man meant. I am the Son of God. Are you the Son of God? Yes, I, myself, am. The musicians, please come.